This is Your Life, episode 21.
This is your life. Are you who you wanna be?
Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be sharing my best advice for first-time authors. Even if you've never thought about writing a book or don't think you could, this episode is for you. I'm going to share why you should at least consider it and what it could mean for your life and career. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Dynamic Communicators International, producers of the SCORE, Launch, and Platform conferences. These unique events are designed for professional speakers and those who simply want to communicate more professionally. These conferences provide the tools you need to take your speaking to the next level. And you can find out more information at dynamiccommunicators.com. Well, my team and I spent this past Thursday planning the first ever platform conference. It's going to be held February the 11th through the 13th, 2013, right here in Nashville. And I'm going to make it small and intimate, just 150 seats. Our goal is to inspire and equip you to take your platform to the next level, no matter where you are in the process. We want you to leave the conference with a personalized action plan that you can implement immediately. We're talking to an all-star lineup of speakers, people who have actually built a platform and have a passion for helping others do the same. And unfortunately, you can't sign up for the conference just yet. We don't have the website up, but I'm telling you now so you can tentatively block the dates. We only have 150 seats, as I said previously. This conference will sell out quickly, I'm confident, perhaps in a matter of hours. But as soon as we have the site up, I'll let you know. I'm committed to letting you know first. So as one of my podcast listeners, you have a chance to buy tickets before it's available to the general public. So let's talk about getting published as a first-time author. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, perhaps you've never considered writing a book or didn't think you could. Well, I think there is at least four reasons why you should. Reason number one, it can add value to others. Everyone's an expert at something. You may not be aware of it. You may have forgotten that you know what you know, but you have something that could add value to others. Reason number two, it can establish you as an authority. Listen, nothing credentials you in this culture like a book, not even a PhD. Having a book makes you an authority. Reason number three, it can advance your career or launch a brand new one. A book often goes where you can't go. It opens doors. It starts conversations. It creates opportunities. Reason number four, it can create an additional income stream. Even if the book itself doesn't generate a lot of money, it can be used to sell back-end services and other products. It can be the foundation for a whole new business enterprise. The problem is that it can be tough to get published. As the former chairman and CEO of Thomas Nelson Publishers, one of the largest publishers in the world, I received and still receive a lot of email from would-be authors who are trying to get their book published, and they're having a hard time. Most of them are frustrated because they can't seem to get anyone interested in their book idea or their manuscript. Well, in this episode, I want to demystify the process a little bit, and I want to give you the same advice I would offer to a close friend over coffee. And believe me, I've done this dozens, probably over 100 times with individuals, friends, acquaintances, people that have just wanted to bend my ear and talk about their book proposal or their book idea. So here's my premise for this episode. Becoming a published author begins by taking five steps. Now, this isn't everything you need to do. You're going to need to do a lot more than these five, but these are the first five. And the problem is that most would-be authors try to skip these steps. And as a result, they don't make any progress. They can't get to where they want to go, which is to get a publishing deal or an offer from a traditional publisher, or even seem to make much headway on a self-published book. So let me go through these one at a time. And at the end, as usual, I'll take some questions. So step number one is educate yourself. You can read books about the industry. For example, there's a book I would recommend called The 2012 Writer's Market by Robert Lee Brewer. There's a link in the show notes, but that's a book that's updated each year. It's got all the publishers. It's got fantastic articles, but it will just help you get up to snuff, so to speak, and get educated on the book publishing industry. Another one, if you happen to be a Christian and want to write for the inspirational market, there's a book by Jerry Jenkins called The Christian Writer's Market Guide 2012. And again, that's a book that gets updated every year. I think Jerry just took that over this last year. But at any rate, that's also an excellent book to get if that's the market that you're writing for. But also read books about writing. And a couple that I would recommend, Stephen Pressfield's book, The War of Art, is fabulous. He talks about just the challenge of making yourself write and consistently produce your art. And I recommend this not only to writers, but to speakers, to artists, to bloggers, to anyone who's trying to create anything that requires emotional and spiritual and artistic effort. Another book I'd recommend, Stephen King's book on writing. Oh man, this is one of my favorite books about writing. It talks about kind of his own autobiography, how he learned to write and the challenge of him writing. And then he gives some exhortations to would-be writers and to those who have been writing for a while. In fact, just saying this makes me want to go back and read it again. Then Anne Lamott's book, Bird by Bird, and that's also a terrific book, and many people will recommend that book. Then in addition to books, and again, this is still under step one, educate yourself, but to follow industry bloggers. You know, there's so many people out there in the industry that are writing, and I'm just going to share with you a few that I follow. One is Rochelle Gardner, and I have the link to her website and all the ones I'm going to mention. Another one is Jane Friedman. Jane used to work for Writer's Digest Books and is now on her own. Chip McGregor, who's a agent in the industry. Mike Schatzkin, who writes about mostly about digital publishing, but he writes really about the industry and kind of the state of the industry. Long articles, but well worth the effort. And then Yates and Yates. There's a variety of agents with that agency that write. All their stuff is really insightful as well. So in addition to books, industry bloggers. Then I would read industry publications. You just ought to bookmark these or subscribe to the RSS feed. And one of them actually requires a paid subscription. But one of them is Publishers Weekly. That's kind of the, you know, basic industry trade publication and is well worth the time for I use it to keep up with the news that's happening in the industry. And then Publishers Lunch. This comes out every day, Monday through Friday. I can't remember what the price of it is, but there's a link in the show notes. It's not that cheap, frankly, but it's very helpful. They usually break the news before anybody else does if you're interested in that type of thing. And then I would also recommend, to the extent that you can, attend industry events, because this gives you the opportunity to network with agents, with editors, with other book publishing professionals, and that can be a real help to you as you begin this publishing journey. But one that I would recommend is Book Expo America, BEA, which is held in conjunction with Blog World. So if you're a blogger, you can kind of kill two birds with one stone. I went for the first time to Blog World this last year. I think it may have been the second time it was held in conjunction with Book Expo America, but at any rate, it was nice to be able to go back and forth between the two conferences and hit both of those in the same exact week. They're held simultaneously to one another in New York City. Then also Digital Book World Conference, which is just what the name suggests. It's a focus more on digital publishing. The O'Reilly Tools for Change Conference is a similar conference. They're both unique in their own way, but if you're interested in digital publishing or the latest tools and kind of what's happening next, both those conferences are excellent. There's some other ones too, like the American Christian Fiction Writers, which is more of a niche for Christian fiction writers, than the International Christian Retail Show, which unfortunately is a lot smaller than it used to be, but is also a great place to network if you're writing for the inspirational market. So that's really the first place to begin. And it's really the first place I begin whenever I'm trying to learn something new, is just educate myself. Become familiar with the players. Become familiar with the source documents. Don't reinvent the wheel, as we talked about in the last episode, episode number 20. Go ahead and learn off other people's mistakes and educate yourself. Step number two is to start building your platform. No, do not wait. You need one from the beginning. And why? There's three reasons. Reason number one, you'll be a lot more attractive to publishers if you have a platform in addition to great content. Content is king, but platform is queen. I say that in my book, and I'll say it here again. It's not either or, it's both and. You cannot succeed without a platform in today's publishing environment. Reason number two, you will be more likely to succeed. Look, you're going to be selling most of the books yourself, regardless of whether you go with a traditional publisher or self-publish your book. And to be successful, you're going to need a platform. You're going to have to create most of the demand out there in the marketplace. In fact, I talk about this under Preparing to Launch, the second part of my book Platform, where I talk about taking on the mindset of the chief marketing officer. You're the person who's the most familiar with the product or the book in this case. You're the person who is bound to be the most articulate spokesperson, and you're the person that has the most at stake. So reason number two, you'll be more likely to succeed. Reason number three is you'll more quickly find your voice. Why? Because you'll be writing more consistently. If you're a blogger, for example, and you're writing a couple times a week, three times a week, four times a week, whatever you commit to, you're just going to get more practice. And, you know, as we've heard before, it takes about 10,000 hours at anything to develop proficiency. And it's also true with writing. I don't know why some people think that they can just sit down and write well the first time, you know, out of the gate. It's not true. You've got to practice, and you will get better with practice. That's the encouraging thing. So blogging is a great way to do that. But also you'll be getting feedback from your audience or from your tribe members that will hone your message and really polish your skills. So those are the three reasons. I would also recommend, and you'd expect me to say this, but to start with my book, Platform. I wrote it for people just like you, people that want to write a book, people that are trying to get published, but people who don't have a platform or they want to take their platform to the next level. I'm not going to belabor this. You can find out more information at michaelhyatt.com/platform. You can also listen to episodes 13 and 14 of this podcast, where I talk about the five steps you must take to build your platform. And by the way, you never finish building a platform. I had somebody ask me the other day on a radio program, how do I know when my platform is done? It's never done, because your platform is, in essence, a community. If you don't take care of it and continue to serve it and continue to lead it, you'll lose it. It's that simple. So step number one, educate yourself. Step number two, start building your platform. And by the way, the time to start is now. It might have been great if you'd started 5 years ago, but maybe you didn't. Well, the second best time to start is now. Step number three is write a killer book proposal. Write a killer book proposal. Now, let me tell you something you may not have thought of. You're going to need a book proposal whether you intend to self-publish or seek a traditional publisher. Why? Because a book proposal is like a blueprint. You wouldn't start any big project without a plan. You wouldn't start building a house without a plan. The same is true for writing a book. This is a big project. You need a blueprint before you get started. This will also help you identify the book's premise, the book's market. It will help you flesh your idea out into an outline and then develop a marketing plan to get the word out, or at least to convince a publisher that you're going to be a partner in the promotion of the book. Now, I've written two short ebooks on how to prepare a killer book proposal. They're based on my personal experience of reviewing thousands of proposals. In fact, I wrote them because I got tired of telling authors the same thing over and over and requesting the same information over and over. So I wrote the first edition of these probably 25 years ago, and now they're really an industry standard. They're recommended by scores of agents. In fact, I have quotes from many of those agents on my site. And it's enabled, these books have enabled hundreds of authors to get published. And I have quotes from many of those on my site as well. And you can find out more at michaelhyatt.com/book proposal. So go ahead and get those books, or some book. It doesn't have to be my book, but find out what the structure of a book proposal ought to be and then follow that. Then write the proposal. And don't be surprised if it takes a while. This is really hard work. In fact, I find often that writing the book proposal is as hard, sometimes more difficult than writing the book itself, because you have to think, you have to understand where the book's going, you have to understand where the plot's going if you're writing fiction. But just get started and fill out the parts of the book proposal that you know. Like, obviously, you know your bio, so go ahead and do that. You don't have to do it sequentially. Go ahead and do your bio, or if you know kind of what you'd like to do with the marketing, start to flesh that out. You can revise all this later. But get started, keep working on it, hone it as you go, and then when you're finally done, have somebody review it before you send it off to an agent or send it to a publisher, have somebody review it. Maybe you've got a friend who teaches English or a professional editor friend, and you could ask them to review your proposal. In fact, you might even be able to barter something with them in exchange for them reviewing your proposal. In addition, the editorial services section of the 2012 Writer's Market lists over 500 entries, many of which provide some kind of critique service. So it's just good to have somebody take a second look at it before you start sending it off, or frankly, before you embark upon the process of writing. It's kind of a waste of time, frankly, to write much until you've got the proposal done. Then step four is to consider your publishing options. Now, look, you've got really three options. Option number one, the obvious one, is traditional publishing. That's to go to a company like Thomas Nelson Publishers or HarperCollins or some other and approach them about a traditional kind of publishing arrangement where essentially they take most of the risk and they're going to do most of the ugly stuff that's difficult for you as an author to do. So that's a traditional publishing arrangement. They're going to pay you a royalty, oftentimes in advance against royalties, which means until the advance earns back, you don't get additional payments, but they're going to pay you an advance against royalties, then a royalty rate, and it's going to be kind of the conventional thing that we've all read about and maybe you've dreamed about. Option number two is assisted self-publishing. Now, an example of this would be like Westbow Press, which is a division of Thomas Nelson Publishers. But this is a service where essentially they help you with the ugly stuff, finding designers, finding editors, doing the promotional plan, helping with the distribution, all that stuff that is difficult. It doesn't mean that the book's going to sell itself. You're still going to have to do the hard work of promotion and building your platform, which is also true in option number one. But assisted self-publishing makes it a little bit easier. Option number three, this is the option that frankly is the least expensive, allows you to retain most of the money, but is also the most difficult, and that's do-it-yourself self-publishing, where you do everything yourself. You know, you go out almost like you're the general contractor. You find the designers, you find the editors, you figure out the distribution, all of that stuff. Now, which one of these is the best? In my opinion, I get asked that almost every week. It all depends on your ultimate objective. Traditional publishing might be the best choice if you think you really have a shot at hitting the bestsellers list. You're probably not going to do that with self-publishing because you're not going to get the bookstore distribution you need to make that happen. Also, traditional publishing might be the best choice if you want significant bookstore distribution. Or you, who you publish with matters to your audience, or just to you. Or you don't want the hassle of finding the editors, designers, publicists, fulfillment house, etc. What my friend Skip Pritchard, who is the former CEO of Ingram Book Distributors, called the ugly stuff. I would say that if any of those are true, then you might want to go the traditional publishing route. Self-publishing, on the other hand, might be the best choice if you're passionate about your book idea, but can't seem to find a publisher or an agent who gets it. Self-publishing might be the best choice if you're weary of rejection letters and just want to get your book into print. And I understand that. My friend Andy Andrews, before he got his first book accepted by Thomas Nelson, was rejected, I believe, by 52 publishers, including Thomas Nelson twice before they ultimately, the third time, said yes. I was rejected my first book 29 times before I got a publisher to agree to it. But you might be wary of that, and you just want to get your book into print for a variety of reasons, and self-publishing might be the way to do that. You might be interested in self-publishing if you don't really care about selling a gazillion copies and becoming famous. Maybe you just want to give something to your family and friends, and that's really your objective. That's fine. Self-publishing will work in that situation. Self-publishing might be the best choice if you're a public speaker and you need a book to sell at your events, or you want a published book to explain your business philosophy and provide a sort of calling card, you know, sort of an elaborate enhanced business card for prospective clients that explains your philosophy, how you do business, and lets them kind of sample the brew before they get into a consulting relationship with you. Self-publishing might also be the best choice if most of the books are going to be sold by you anyway. You might as well keep the lion's share of the profits. Maybe you've built a platform and you're going to be able to get to the bulk of your platform through your website or some other venue, then self-publishing might make sense. Like, for example, if you're the pastor of a church and you want something to drive your sermon series more deeply into the life of your congregation, self-publishing might be the best option. Self-publishing does not have the same stigma that it had 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. Still controversial. There's a lot of debate about it, as you'll find if you follow the blogs that I talked about earlier, or the websites and the industry, as I talked about earlier. A lot of controversy still, but it's just not that big a deal in terms of from a consumer's perspective. I mean, literally, talk about the last five books or think about the last five books that you read. How many of those could you name the publisher? Most of us just don't pay attention to that. If it is important in your particular industry segment and people do pay attention, then maybe you want to go the traditional route. So that's the fourth step, is to consider your options. And then step number five, and assuming that you want to pursue the traditional publishing route, you're going to need to find a good literary agent. I see so many authors waste so much time trying to get the attention of publishers. It's largely a waste of time. Traditional publishers no longer talk, and again, there's exceptions, but don't usually talk to individual authors who are unrepresented. Why? They just don't have the time. They let the literary agents do the filtering, separating the wheat from the chaff. The publisher knows that if the literary agent has sifted through all the proposals and if he's representing it, then it's probably worth taking a look at. Well, a literary agent also provides three benefits to you as an author. Number one, access. They know the acquisitions editors, and those are the editors at the publishing house who ultimately make the decisions about which books get presented to their publication board or their editorial board. So an agent's going to provide that kind of access. They're going to be able to get the door open where you're not even probably going to get a return to your phone calls, or your emails are going to go unreturned simply because you don't have access. Another thing that a literary agent provides is leverage. Publishers negotiate contracts, usually many contracts, sometimes scores of contracts every week, but they do this for a living. You are outgunned as an author when you go up against a publisher in terms of negotiating the contract. Well, a literary agent brings equilibrium into that kind of relationship, into that transaction, so you've got someone equally versed in publishing language and intellectual property and can negotiate on your behalf and make sure that you get the best deal possible. I personally don't believe that most publishers are trying to take advantage of you, but it's just the nature of it that they're going to be looking out for their own interests and for the interests of the publishing company they represent. It's your responsibility to look out for your own interests, and the best way generally is to do that with a literary agent. So they provide access, leverage. The third thing that a literary agent provides for you is focus. It allows you to stay focused on writing the content and building your platform and allowing someone else to handle the back end, the business side of the equation, and frankly, to have the difficult conversations so that you don't have to, so that you can stay focused on the positive aspects of the relationship and stay focused on the really important work that no one else can do, which again is writing the manuscripts and building the platform. If you want a list of general market agents, you can buy the 2012 Guide to Literary Agents. There's going to be a link in the show notes, or there is a link in the show notes. And I've also compiled a list of agents who represent Christian authors. And by the way, this is the only list of Christian agents I've been able to find anywhere. This list does not constitute, by the way, my endorsement, nor do I recommend specific agents. So there's no sense asking. I just don't. I mean, a lot of these guys are my friends. I've worked with them for years, and I just don't recommend one agent above another's. It's up to you to do your homework, to do your due diligence, to check references, and find one that works for you. And frankly, sometimes getting an agent is as difficult as it used to be to get a publisher, but you've got to persist. And in fact, that leads me kind of to the conclusion of this segment of the podcast. Don't lose heart. This is probably the most important thing I can say to you today. Yes, you're going to be rejected. As I said earlier, I had over 29 publishers reject my first book proposal, and it was disheartening. I wanted to quit, yet that went on to be a New York Times bestseller. And my last book, Platform, almost didn't happen also because I got so discouraged with the writing process. I wanted to give up numerous times. In fact, it was almost a weekly thing and became really kind of a joke with my wife. Yet that too went on to be a New York Times bestseller. So like most important things in life, and you've heard me say this on this podcast before, you're going to encounter resistance and you just got to press through it. All the bliss is on the other side of the chasm. So you've got to stay engaged. You've got to fight past the resistance And if you've got something that's important to share with the world, and I bet you do, then you're going to just have to press through the resistance. That's a sign that you're usually on the right track as you're encountering that kind of resistance. So I want to take some questions. And honestly, when I put out the call for questions on this topic, I got more than I have for any other topic that I've ever covered on my podcast so far. So this episode is going to be part one, and next week will be part two, and it'll be all questions. All next week, I'm just going to talk about advice to first-time authors, and I'm just going to be answering your questions. And by the way, if you've got a question, you can send me a voicemail at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. Okay, the first question comes from Annette Truckee.
My website is AnnetteTruckee.com. And my question, Michael, is what were the worst mistakes, although they were used for good, I'm sure, what were the most costly errors that you made along the way that you would never do again and that you could tell us about so that we wouldn't make the same mistakes? Sorry for being so rambling. Thanks.
Annette, fortunately, I didn't make any fatal mistakes. I came close, but I didn't make any fatal mistakes along the way. And I think one of the things that I think we have to remember is that most mistakes aren't fatal. They're only fatal or final if we quit. And I would say that was the biggest mistake I almost made, was giving into my fears and quitting. When you decide that you're going to write a book, you're going to encounter a lot of fears. You know, you're going to feel like you're overwhelmed, like it's too big of a job. I remember when I got my first contract for my first book, I celebrated for about 2 seconds. And then it dawned on me that, oh my gosh, now I've got to write this thing. And it scared the daylights out of me. And I just felt overwhelmed. I felt inadequate. But even to this day, I still struggle with that because I'm kind of out there on the edge, outside of my comfort zone, which, by the way, is where all the important stuff happens. And you're just going to feel those feelings like you want to quit. And I would just say, don't. You've got to stay with it. You've got to push through that. If you're going to grow as a person, if you're going to accomplish something significant, and if you're going to give birth to this idea that's in your heart, this book that you want to share with the world. So that probably was my biggest near miss, my biggest mistake. The next question comes from Brent Mays.
Hi, Michael. This is Brent Mays from Newnan, Georgia. I have a website at 24oceans.com. I love your podcast. It's been very refreshing to me. Thank you so much. My big question is for first-time authors. How do you develop a way to put two types of genre out to the mainstream market? I'm looking to do some textbooks, some e-textbooks, as well as some Christian fiction. Right now, my blog is mainly focused on Christian aspects. Can I use that same blog to push my textbook out? Or how do I get a platform for my textbook? Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Brent, the short answer is that I wouldn't pursue both at the same time. Pick one. It's going to be a different platform. It's going to be a different audience. And I really don't think that you can be effective at building both at the same time. There's an old Chinese proverb that I love that says, man who chases two rabbits catches neither. So just decide on one. This is a matter of sequence. You can do the other one later, but pick one to work on now and begin to build it. I think in terms of the blog, you know, the website, again, you may want to end up having two websites, but for now, until you get some momentum, one is probably about all you can handle. You may be a high output person, maybe a high capacity person. I can tell you, I can barely keep up with my own blog. I can't imagine trying to do another one. And life is like that. It's a series of choices. You don't do everything you could possibly do. You focus in on the things that only you can do. That's where you have the most value and where you create the most leadership opportunity for yourself. The next question comes from Dallin Christensen.
Hi, Michael. My name is Dallin Christensen. You can find me on the internet at www.whiteboardbusiness.com. I have a question about the level of detail that you should have in your book outline before starting to do any serious writing. I'm working on a book outline right now, have some projects going on, so I'm not able to really do a lot of writing at the present time, but I've got the chapter outline set up, and I know that you set up your book with a number of different sections. And I wanted to know, how far down into the level of detail should you go before you stop outlining and actually start writing or start putting some of your blog posts and other content into a format where it would go into book form? Thanks very much. Love the show and hope to hear an answer to the question. Thanks.
Dellen, thank you for your question. I assume we're talking about nonfiction here. Fiction's a little bit of a different animal, but a lot of this depends on your own style. I personally outline down to three levels. So I've got the part divisions in the book, like in my book Platform, if you want to look at the table of contents of that, it has five parts. And then obviously I identify the chapters within the parts. And then I go ahead and outline. This doesn't get submitted to anybody, but it's my own working outline as I'm writing the book. I outline to the third level, which is the section or the subhead. Now, I know writers that outline in more detail than that. The sections may have more detail. I tend to let that unfold organically because I want it to be more narrative in the way that it feels and more conversational in the way that it reads. So that's just me. But let me just say this. Don't let this outlining become such an obsession that you end up outlining down to the nth degree and you never actually end up writing. So I think for most people, I would recommend three levels of outlining and then start cranking out the word count. The next question comes from David McLaughlin.
Hi, Michael. This is David McLaughlin. I'm calling from Oklahoma City. My blog is at davidbmclaughlin.com. I enjoy you on John Maxwell's Day About Books. My question for you is, when you're writing, when do you fine-tune your sentences and paragraphs? Do you find that you write and get in the flow and then worry about going back and fixing things and pretty them up later? Or do you try to write things eloquently as you go? I find sometimes I get bogged down if I try and fix things as I'm writing them. So I try to write and then go back and fix them. But just wondering what your plan was. Thank you very much.
David, you're doing it the way I do it. I separate creating and editing, and I identify those as two separate tasks. They really do access the two hemispheres of your brain differently. Writing or creating is really a right brain activity, and editing is a left brain activity, so I don't try to mix them up. You won't be in your right mind if you do. So I recommend that you focus on one, then the other. And sometimes I'll take a break, and I'll go back and edit what I've written in the last hour or something. But again, I don't try to mix them. I try to really stay focused on the creative aspects initially, and then I come back later at another time and do editing. The next question comes from Dana Bickham.
Hi, it's Dana Bickham from ayearinthespirituallife.blogspot.com, calling from Angleton, Texas. Michael, I am writing a book that I want to publish by more traditional methods. However, in the interim, I want to publish an ebook that I've written. Do you have any advice about formatting or software when approaching an ebook project? And do you have any resources you want to recommend? Thank you.
Thanks, Dana. An ebook can mean a lot of different things. If you're talking about a PDF file, like my ebooks, Creating Your Personal Life Plan or Writing a Winning Book Proposal, I've documented that process in a post I wrote some time ago, and I've included a link in the show notes. And believe it or not, I used Keynote on the Mac, which is some presentation software like PowerPoint, to create those ebooks. And I know a lot of people who have done it that way as well. And I've documented it again in the post that you can find in the show notes. If we're talking about a Kindle or an EPUB file, which is what the Nook and the Sony readers use, then I would use iWork Pages on the Mac or Scrivener, which works with either Mac or Windows, but both can output directly to an EPUB file. Then you can use an application like Calibrate to convert the EPUB format to Mobi or Kindle. And if all that sounds too difficult and your eyes are starting to glaze over, don't sweat it. You can find services online that will do the conversion for you for usually less than about $100. Obviously, if you're being published by a traditional publisher, they'll handle all this stuff for you. But you should insist that they release all the formats simultaneously with the paper version. Don't let the format get in the way of people buying your book. Let them consume it in the format that they want to use the most. The next question comes from Jamie Tardy.
Hi, Michael. This is Jamie Tardy from eventualmillionaire.com. I have a literary agent, and I'm currently writing a nonfiction proposal, and I have your book on how to write a book proposal, which I love, but I have a burning question. Does a publisher just want plain text, or can I make it stand out and have it professionally designed? Thank you so much for everything you do.
Jamie, I know from looking at your website, design is important to you, and it's important to me as well. But honestly, publishers want plain text with minimal formatting. They want to get the content right before they start the design process, and that really is the right order. My friend and editor on the platform book, Jamie Chavez, has a great post on this. I've got a link in the show notes, but it's called Formatting Your Manuscript for Your Editor. It's basically everything you need to know. Just do what she says and you'll be good. The last question comes from Sherry Meyer.
Hi, Sherry Meyer calling from Portland, Oregon. This is for your podcast coming up on first-time authors. Website address is sowingseedsofgrace.wordpress.com. My question is, where do you think the memoir genre stands right now in acceptance by publishers, especially from first-time authors? Thanks much, and I look forward to finding out what you have to say if my question's picked. Bye-bye.
Sherry, I think honestly it's pretty tough. This category has been popular for a number of years, and the market is really, really flooded. That's not to say it can't be done, but one of three things would have to be true probably for you to get published, to get a memoir published as a first-time author. You'd have to have a really, really compelling story. Number two, and by the way, compelling from the perspective of the publisher. Publishers see it all. And it may be compelling from your perspective. Obviously it is, or you wouldn't be writing it. But it's got to be compelling from the publisher's perspective. Another thing you probably have to have is you've got to be a brilliant writer, or you have to have a significant platform. In fact, it might take all three of those to get a deal for a memoir today. But as an alternative, you could write a straight up nonfiction book and then use your personal anecdotes to illustrate it. That's just one option. And I really do believe, though, and I say this to authors all the time, if your heart's really set on it, if you're really convinced that that's what you want to do, then go for it. I mean, the worst that can happen is that it doesn't happen, and then you can change directions and go in a different direction. So that's about all the time we've got for this episode. Next week, as I said, I'm going to get to the rest of the questions that have come in. So if I didn't get to your question this time, don't despair. Good chance I'll get to it next time. But what additional questions do you have about getting published? To comment on this episode, you can go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/021, as in episode 21. In terms of announcements, if you're ready to get serious about building your platform and taking your blogging to the next level, you can't do better than launching a self-hosted WordPress blog. And that's what nearly all professional bloggers use. That's what I use at michaelhyatt.com. However, if you're a little technically challenged and you've been afraid to try and install WordPress yourself, I've got great news. A few weeks ago, I produced a free screencast called How to Set Up a Self-Hosted WordPress Blog in 20 Minutes or Less. And this short video will take you through the process step by step. And trust me, anybody can do this. In the last 10 days, I've had over 150 people use this video to launch their blog. And you can find this screencast, again, it's free, at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. And there's a link in the show notes, WordPress setup. And I'll be in Fort Worth, Texas tomorrow, Thursday, August the 9th, speaking for Sendera Funding. And I'm going to be doing two sessions, the 5 marks of authentic leadership and platform get noticed in a noisy world. And you can find out more at michaelhyatt.com/Fort Worth 2012. And I'd love to meet you if you're in the Fort Worth area tomorrow, and shake your hand if you can make it. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be so grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps so much in keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, as I said, please go to michaelhyatt.com. Go to the show notes for this episode. Scroll down to the comments section. I'd love to hear from you. A comment, a question, or whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life.